state your name, please, and your address. And we have approximately a 5-minute cutoff.
Short.
Dennis Hughes. I live in Milwaukee, 144 North Jefferson Street. Just here to talk about the compensation study. We're excited to see it. I guess my first comment would be that I wish we could see it before this meeting, before you take any action, just so we can make relevant comments based on the outcome of the study. We're hopeful that it will lead to wage increases that would put these COs in a position more comparable to the rest of the market in the state of Wisconsin. But I won't make any comments about a study I haven't seen. I wish I could. My only concern right here that I wanted to have addressed is just the fact, and this has been an issue, thank you. This has been an issue since 2012, since the shift schedule for correctional officers was changed. I know any of the board members that were around at that time are aware of this problem, but there's a 5-2-4-2 schedule for correctional officers, direct supervision officers, AR specialists, and kitchen staff. That has led to a situation where these are the only employees that are paid short pay periods. So there are some pay periods where they're paid for 9 days of work, and some pay periods where they're paid for a full 10 days of work. All other employees are paid 80 hours a week per pay period, or 80 hours per pay period. So that has led to this 5-2-4-2 schedule has led to a situation where there are 26 pay periods. These employees are paid for 252 days of work, or 2016 hours of work. They're not paid for the full 2,080 hours of work that all other employees are paid. So that ends up where they're 8 days short on their paychecks for the year. Employees, when they're hired, are not told that. They're surprised to find when they come on with the county that they're not paid the full 2,080 that every other employee in the state basically is assumes that they're going to be getting. The Monday through Friday staff, generally most county employees are on a 5-2 schedule. To weekend days, they have 26 pay periods, they're paid for 250 days, 2,000 hours of work, and they get 10 holidays. So they get 80 hours of paid days off. There are some other unique schedules. The corporals have a 5-2-5-3 schedule. Those corporals have 26 pay periods also. They're paid for 244 days of work, 1,952 hours per year of work days, but they get paid for 2,080 hours. That means that they have 128 hours or 16 days of paid days off. So 9 to 5, regular 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, employees get 10 days off, paid days off, holidays. These corporals get 16 paid days off. And the dispatch employees, they work a 4-2, 4-2, 5-2 schedule. They get paid 80 hours per pay period. They have 26 pay periods. That's 249 days of work. They're paid for, they work 1,992 hours. So that means that they have 88 hours or 11 days that they are paid that they don't work. So we would hope that this compensation study will alleviate this problem, that the pay periods for correctional officers will be 80 hours per week every 2 weeks like every other employee, and that they would get some form of holiday. We're not asking for the full 10 holidays that the 9-to-5 employees get Monday through Friday. They're being reasonable. All they want is the full 2,080 hours. So that would be 8 paid days off. So hopefully this study will alleviate that shifting problem, but we hope just generally that the compensation study will compensate them properly for the work that they're doing for the county. So thank you very much.
Further citizen comments? All right, then seeing none, we'll move on to the next item. I have no reports. Do any committee members?
I got one. You may be aware of, I am the youth and governor mentor. We got two new guys next month. I was hoping to hear this week, but I couldn't get a hold of any. Henry and Andrew. I interviewed these guys, and they're really nice gentlemen, so we're going to look forward to having them there. I think I'd like to get involved a little bit with them, getting a little bit more involved with the people on this side of the room, the finance staff. I'd like them to start by maybe having Mr. Gertson before he retires from us, because he's advancing years here. He can teach some things like bonding and just some financial things. So I, if anyone's got any other good ideas, things like that, for, you'll meet them, and they're really two outstanding young men. So I'm looking forward to them contributing to our committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Further report?
Who's assuming we're here?
That's Anna.
Welcome, Anna.
Thank you.
Anna's been on the committee.
Good.
We have a couple of new people, Ed Vicky, Greg Retzlaw. And there's one other, but he's not here this evening.
Nice to meet you.
You too.
Further committee reports? All right, seeing none, then we have before us the meeting of April 14th minutes.
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? They are approved. And the CABA first quarter report, who's presenting that?
Brock here.
Oh, okay, very good. I can see over there.
Thank you, Chairman Rose. Good evening, everyone. Brock Portilla from the Kenosha Area Business Alliance. So here to present on the quarterly finance committee packets that everyone has received. There's some new information here at the end that I'll cover that came up at the end of, at the last quarterly finance committee. I guess with that, I'll kind of jump right into it. The packet begins with our BRE, Business Retention and Expansion Report. This is data that is compiled by our Vice President of Economic Development, Heather Wessling. She is tasked with meeting with 100 local companies on an annual basis. We do that strategically to meet and know what our strengths are, what our weaknesses are, what brings companies to Kenosha, what keeps them here, and what their pain points are. So, we do that to get kind of inside the minds of the companies and help use that to attract new businesses, but also to keep our local businesses here and help them to be successful. The second page of this business retention and expansion report, every quarter Heather focuses on a specific industry. This quarter, the focus was on the food processing and manufacturing industry. So you can see here, this is an industry that we consider to be a strength of ours. This is kind of a situation where talent attracts talent. We've got companies like Ocean Spray that have been here for a long time and have really helped develop this market for us, and is really one of the strongest markets that we have going here in Kenosha. Certainly there are other industries, but like I said, we like to just take a snapshot of an individual industry every quarter. I guess the most recent success story here would be number 8, Gourmet Foods International. So they just moved up here in December. This is an Atlanta-based food company. They're located out in Pleasant Prairie. They just recently opened operations in late March, early April. So I guess with that, I'll move into the revolving loan fund information. So here, I'll kind of highlight some of the key points and differences. You're going to see our admin allocation come out of here this quarter. So that's calculated annually. The reason you're seeing it now is it was calculated as of December 31st, but the actual cash transfer wasn't made until early January. So you'll see that within all the funds. Nothing new, no new loan activity to report in the EDA fund. On the county revolving loan fund, the next, if you go to the next page, so the big item here is the $1 million distribution. That was those were monies used for the closing of the Salem Business Park. That was closed in escrow in late February. There was an easement item that we were working through, but that was closed out in April, and that's now ours. We're working on developing the infrastructure and actively pursuing tenants for that business park. The next page is the CKC fund. This is, if you recall, last quarter we worked on an amendment to the loan handbook for this to provide us with some more opportunities to try to use this fund. That was approved by the county board, and we're now practicing off of the new handbook. No new activity report on for this quarter, but feel like with the new requirements that we can follow, that should help us disperse some of those funds. On the high impact loan fund, so the only activity here, there was a disbursement of $175,000 to Niagara Bottling. That was a loan that was previously approved, and we were just holding some of the funds waiting for some documentation to come through. We received that in early March, and the second half of that high impact fund was distributed. And then, of course, the second page to all of these shows the individual loan funds within each revolving loan fund. So then the item here at the end, this is some new information that we put together at the last quarterly meeting. One of the committee members had asked about this high impact fund, and we talk about how it's been an invaluable closing tool for us in bringing companies here, and we talk about how great it was, and somebody said, let's see the numbers. What are the numbers? So here's where we've pieced together the numbers. So to date, we've distributed $2.575 million in high impact funds to companies to bring them here to Kenosha. That has resulted in a projected 1,200 new jobs. If you do the math on that, that's just over a little over $2,000 per job created. These are, you can see, high paying, quality jobs with an annual salary of over $48,000. It's resulted in $128 million of new private investment here in Kenosha County, and that's over $57 million of payroll. Below that information, you see the individual companies with the dollar amounts and the job projections and the capital expansion, the specifics for each of those companies. So with that, I guess I would thank you for your time, and feel free to answer any questions that you may have. Ben?
Thanks for a great presentation, by the way. As far as that Salem Business Park goes, do we have any occupants in there?
Not yet, no. We're currently working on infrastructure and getting it shovel ready. So we're actively pursuing tenants for when we are ready to put shovels in the ground.
When do you think that date will be?
Next summer.
Thank you. That's all.
Right.
Just curious, you know that the IKEA is building a plant in Oak Creek. I was just curious. Did CABA ever have a conversation with them, do you know, or not?
I do not know that answer.
Okay.
I think that was recent to CABA, about 8 months ago, and I think that was finalized a bit before my time.
Okay. All right.
I'm not sure as to any specifics there.
Okay, thank you.
Richard.
On the jobs projected on all of these different listings here, what is the time frame to meet those projections? And could you get back with us at some time on the percentage of accuracy on that?
Absolutely. So, going forward, I guess, so the answer to your first question is the time frame to hit those jobs is on a case-by-case basis for each loan. A typical loan would say you have a 3-year creation period or a ramp-up period to hit that number, and then you would have a 5-year maintenance period that you would have to retain those funds. If not, you would typically take it back on some type of prorated basis. Going forward, we're working on obtaining the actual accounts to make sure that's something that we need to monitor to make mm-hmm. sure that they are in compliance with loan agreements. And absolutely, that is something, this is a report that we put together, but I would look to incorporate this with actuals on an ongoing basis from quarter to quarter to
Good.
Report actuals going forward.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Now, if you read the newspaper today, the editorial about the lack of building permits or U-Line, which is, I think, a concern. Can you shed any further light on that progress?
Uh, I don't think that that's an item that the county and the city are working through right now. I wouldn't have any further updates than what was reported publicly.
Further? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll move on then to the sheriff's resolution.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. We're talking about the Sea Dog grant. I lost track on the agenda.
Yes, correct.
We are requesting the county receive money from the Wisconsin Office of Justice Assistance. They've awarded $211,792 to Multi-County Consortium Drug Task Force, of which we belong, with Racine and Walworth, Dodge, and Jefferson counties. The Kenosha County share of this grant would be $53,140. That money would be used to help fund our K-Dog group overtime expenses and other expenses that K-Dog works. This passed the Judiciary and Law Committee last week.
Move to approve.
Second.
This is just the receipt of it.
Correct. This money's been granted to us, and we're just requesting that we receive it.
Any other discussion? Then all those in favor.
Aye.
Opposed? This will be a two-thirds vote.
Correct.
All right, then we'll move on to the next item, a memorandum on capital funded items.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In 2015, we budgeted $8,500 to purchase tactical response team rifles. As luck would have it, we got a pretty darn good deal on our rifles, and we had $2,550 left over from that purchase of those six rifles. We are requesting to use that money to buy an additional... three rifles to help augment our patrol rifle inventory, which is, we're actually below what we actually need to fulfill all of our bark squads right now.
So, does this require any committee action? This
is just approval. Just approval of the committee.
It does.
It does require.
All right. All right, you've heard the discussion. Do you have any comments or motions? All right, there's a motion. Supervisor Kubicki, is there a second?
Second.
There's further discussion on the motion then? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Passes.
Thank you.
All right, number eight on the agenda, Public Works and the Snowmobile Trail.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before you, this might look a little familiar, but this is to apply again to the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources for funding to maintain Kenosha County snowmobile trails. The county board originally approved the snowmobile trails for the 2016-17 season. After the fact of going through the grant process, Twin Runners was approached the Parks Department to use the county for an additional 13.5 miles funded trail through the state that is currently a club funded trail. So in order to apply for that grant, the DNR would like a resolution passed in order to have that additional 13.5 miles of trail provided through the county. So before you, basically this is just a pass-through to receive that funding to go after this grant with the DNR.
All right, are there any discussion, Kim?
Pat, the money that we get from the DNR, is that enough to cover the maintenance of it, of the trails?
Our original one was yes. We received $19,225, which goes towards a lot of the state-funded trails. But with the Twin Runners, that is not funded through the state currently. So the Twin Runners Club is requesting to be part of the state-funded trail, which would basically be a reimbursement for that additional 13.5 miles of trail.
And everything will be covered by the state?
Everything will be covered through the state, yes.
Just point of clarification, is it $3,400? That's it?
Yes. It's going to be $3,375 for the 13.5 miles of trail, which the state would basically reimburse the county.
All right, further discussion?
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
There's further discussion on the resolution? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's approved.
Thank you.
Then Human Services budget modification.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee members. I'm here today because the Division of Children and Family Services applied for a grant, a one-year grant to improve our parenting services in Kenosha County. It's a one-year grant renewable for up to two additional years. The focus of the project is to expand parenting to voluntary parenting services to families with kids 12 and under who are at risk for abuse and neglect. The families we're going to be targeting may have problems of alcohol or drug abuse, other behavior problems, or truancy in the home. And this parenting program will be using two enhanced evidence-based parenting programs, the triple PP, primary care parenting, and effective Black parenting. And we anticipate we're going to reach out, we'll reach 130 families a year for every year that we have this grant. The grant will be used to fund two full-time positions that will be in our prevention services network, not county positions, but positions for our private contracted services, one through prevention services network and one through Kenosha Area Family and Aging Services. It's $152,019 a year grant, and we will be supplying $34,420 in in-kind match when the grant ends, the positions would end. So we're asking for your approval for this program. And it's on a state fiscal year, so it would start in July 1st of this year.
All right, discussion? Any motions?
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
I'll say.
All right, further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Sounds like
a bargain. Thank you very much.
Sounds like a bargain.
It is. It's a bargain. It's a good program. Thank you very much.
All right, now the next item is the Human Services. This is the Corrections Officers Classification.
Personnel. I'm sorry, Human Resources.
That's correct. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Either I shrunk or you got taller. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good evening, everybody. Thank you all for coming out. As you know, the County Board authorized my department, the Personnel Office, to conduct a thorough analysis of all of our jobs over the course of 3 years. This is the result of the second phase of that. It was identified that the corrections officers and their employment experience really needed a very thorough analysis, far more than the other jobs that you considered last April and will consider this fall.
Does everybody have a copy of this?
A bunch right here.
Okay. If not, we'll.
If anyone
in the audience, as
there's
well,
more over there.
If you want one, we'll provide you one.
Anyone else? Anybody here?
I'll take some to the people.
There's more over there too.
There, I'll give me these. Sir.
On the bottom. Does
everybody that wants to study here?
Thanks, sir. Okay,
sure. All right. Excuse me. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We retain the services of Mount Siegel Waters Consulting. With me is Mr. Elliot Sussels, who is from Siegel and was the person most responsible for conducting the wage portion of the study. But I want to publicly thank the Kenosha County Sheriff's Department, particularly Captains Hallisey and Levin, for their cooperation. The County Division of Payroll and the Division of Finance, and Patty Merrill, who did a ton of work on the wages. We're quite pleased with what we are presenting to you tonight. It is going to cover wages, attrition, scheduling, staffing, and overtime, and our recommendations will be made on all of those at the end of the presentation. With your permission, then, I will turn it over to Mr. Sussels, who will present the wage study and the results of that.
Thank you, Bob. Good evening, everyone. Again, my name is Elliot Sussels, Senior Vice President with Siegel Waters Consulting. Happy to be with you again to discuss this portion of the market study. Let me start out by saying that as we examine the appropriateness of compensation for corrections officers, we examine not just what other similarly situated counties were paying their correction officers, but what other employment opportunities there were in the, pardon me, in the region that might compete for that same talent. So in the next slide, slide three, we wanted to reference or just share with you the basis for our analysis. And it includes, obviously, information on other public sector counties, as I said, that have civilian corrections officers. But we also examined private sector data for jobs that required the same kinds of skill sets, education, experience as that which would be found in those folks seeking employment as corrections officers. Because obviously when you look at a labor market, you're not just competing with other counties for corrections officer jobs, but you're competing for other employment opportunities in the region. So we examined both private sector data, obviously public sector data. We examined the county's payroll statistics with respect to present incumbents, what folks were being paid, and so forth. Now, in turning to slide four, let me say that we've taken two perspectives on looking at the competitiveness of compensation. One is with respect to looking at base wages, to base wages, in other words, base wages paid by the county for corrections officers to base wages paid by those other counties for civilian corrections officers, as well as private sector occupations with similar education and skills in Kenosha County. And on slide four, we give you examples of those kinds of jobs, which include dispatchers, construction laborers, truck drivers, protective services workers, again, not sworn, and other similarly situated occupations. Currently, the pay ranges, and we did this to kind of adjust for differences in work week or work year. So you'll see here that says this is information based on 2,080 hours. And I know there was some discussion commentary earlier about differences in the definition of the work year. But since most of the employers that we're comparing to have something other than the 2,022 hours or 18 hours, that is the definition of the work year. We adjusted pay so that it is on an apples-to-apples basis on 2,080 hours. So just so you understand what that is about. On that adjusted basis, the pay range for corrections officers here at Kenosha is a little bit more than $37,100 at entry and a maximum of $46,000, almost $900 at maximum. If we look at similarly situated jobs, meaning civilian corrections officer jobs in the counties that are referenced in slide three, we see that the average for those is $44,250 at entry or $54,055 at maximum. And so if you look at the relative market position of Kenosha to those other counties, it is at 84% of the minimum and 87% the maximum. We view market competitiveness as a rule of thumb as being somewhere between 95 and 105% of average pay in the market. And that's a standard that we have used in our prior discussions with you on other survey matters. So the takeaway there is quite straightforward in that pay, whether it's at the entry or the maximum on a base pay wages basis only, is significantly below market, and I think that's something to consider, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. On a private sector basis, the private sector entry for those broad categories of jobs, so this is an aggregate, when you look at all of those types of jobs referenced above, is $35,340 at entry and $57,880. So against the private sector, so if you're competing against the private sector for those jobs, against those jobs, you're right at market, okay? That 95 to 105% corridor at entry. However, at the top end of the range, you're even worse off in a competitive position than you were just looking at the public sector corrections officers. To corrections officers. Slide 5 converts that into simply an hourly wage basis. So you take the annual salaries, the annual numbers that are there, divide them by 2,080 hours, which is kind of the rule, the ruler that we're using to standardize all this. And you can see that in terms from a public sector perspective, there is about a $3.40 shortfall, if you will, at the minimum compared to the other public sector employers, and about a $3.45 shortfall at the maximum. So about a consistent dollar amount. And against the private sector, starting wages of $16.99, but a maximum of $27.81. So if you look at that, you're over $5 an hour less than the maximum pay in the private sector for similarly situated jobs. Now, so that's looking at the public sector and the private sector separately. On slide 6, we actually blended the two together, because clearly you might make the argument that you compete not just against the public sector or the private sector, but a labor market that consists of both of them. And when we do that, so when we look at base hourly wages for public and private sector combined, what you see is that the average entry pay is $19.13 against the county $17.84, and the maximum is $26.91 compared to $22.54. So you're below market at the minimum and at the maximum when you look at this kind of aggregated labor market. Now, of course, one of the questions that you might very well ask, and legitimately so, is, well, what if we take into consideration differences in benefits? So, you know, are the benefits provided by the county in some way offsetting the below market wages? And that's a perfectly appropriate consideration to make. And so slide 7 is a comparison that now takes those annual salaries and adds in the value of benefits. And you'll see in the first column we have Kenosha County, the value of the benefit package is $14,388. The public sector is $13,152, and the private sector is $10,355. So while on a pure wage basis, both the public sector and the private sector are higher than Kenosha, there is some offsetting factor in terms of the cost of benefits here at Kenosha. So we've added those benefit dollars to the salary, and what slide 7 provides you with is a dollar comparison of both base pay and benefits. That said, compared to the public sector, you are at entry about $6,000 below market, and about $6,000 below market at the maximum. Taking into consideration the private sector, you are now about $6,000 above market at the minimum, I apologize, but about $7,000 below market at the maximum. And the last line gives you that same blended perspective of, if you looked at the public and private sector overall, at the minimum, you are just about at market within a few dollars, but at the maximum, you're still about $6,500 below market in terms of the value of both base wages and benefits. The next slide is in this package just to anticipate the question of where did the numbers come from for the value of benefits for Kenosha County. And the $14,388, you'll notice, is the same number that we have referenced. It's a number from a prior study that we presented as well. So the bar chart there, all the other numbers are kind of superfluous. They were looking at all the other jobs in a prior study that we did for the county. But what was important, we thought, was to understand that the $14,388 for the value of benefits is a consistent number that we have used in our analyses that we presented previously to the county. Slide 9 converts, if you will, slide 7, which was on a dollar basis for wages and benefits, to a cost per hour basis. So it gives you a sense that, and I'll just reference Kenosha against the average of the markets, a minimum of $24.73 an hour, including the cost of benefits, which is just about what we see in the public and private combined, but on an hourly basis, at the maximum, it's about $3 an hour behind market or below market when you look at the private and public sector markets combined. Slide 10 actually shows you those calculations. So you'll see the difference in the public sector. If you're just looking at corrections officers to corrections officers, in other words, corrections officers, civilian corrections officers in the county versus civilian corrections officers in the other counties, which is what we call public sector, you're a little bit under $3 an hour below market, inclusive of the value of both base pay and benefits. And on the private sector, you're about $2.75 above at the minimum, but $3.37 below. And then clearly the last line just gives you a sense that if you look at the public and private sector markets together, what the market position is. If you look at, take this perspective of base pay and the cost of benefits together, and you were to say, what are the kinds of adjustments that would be needed to base pay to equal market total compensation? Slide 11 provides that perspective. To equal total compensation, the market value of total compensation, if you were just comparing to other public sector, civilian corrections folks, it would require a 16% increase in base pay at the minimum and a 12.8% increase at the maximum. In terms of the private sector, we know that that pay at the minimum is higher, so it's actually a 15.5% decrease at the minimum, but a 15% increase at the maximum. Overall, you are, again, just about at market at the minimum if you take into consideration both the public and private sectors, but at the maximum of the pay range, you are about 14% below market, taking into consideration the total compensation. So turning to slide 12, what do we draw from this? Well, I started out by saying, what's the ruler that we use to identify whether you're market competitive? And that is to say that you're between 95 and 105% of market. Kenosha County starting wages are at 100% of the public-private mix, but only 85% of the public sector market. So for those jobs that are absolutely identical, if you want to be a corrections officer, you want to be here or in any other of the counties that have civilians doing this job, that you are at 85% of the market. Kenosha County is nearly 14% below market for long-term corrections officers. What do we mean long-term? Those folks toward the maximum of the pay range that you saw on the other slides. We think that Kenosha County needs to improve both starting wages to effectively compete in the public and private sectors, and to improve the top wages for long-term corrections officers. And to make that point, slide 13 is actually a distribution from a census file that we have of the number of corrections officers by years of service. And what you'll see, if you look at the far right, first of all, there are 139 corrections officers. 65.5% of them are at the top of the pay scale, have 6 years or more of service. So that is, from the data that I just shared with you, that at the top end is where pay is certainly lacking significantly, and even on a total compensation basis. But you see here distribution for the first, the new folks coming in, 12 or 8.6%, and then the remaining 25% have 1 to 3 years of service. Slide 14 is a recommendation that the county adopt a wage schedule which makes things a little bit more market competitive. Implementation is suggested for August 1st, Bob Riedel can speak more to the cost. We were not involved in the costing, but the proposal and this little table in the middle of that page shows, again, the current $17.84 an hour to $22.54 an hour compared to what's proposed of $19.57 an hour to $24.86. So you see that there's anywhere between $1.75 and about $2.30 proposed increase as a result of this.
If I may, on 14 again, we have set wage schedules now that were established by the consultant the last time we did the market survey, which was a year ago. So NE5 is a range which exists. NE5, like all of our ranges, have about a 30-35% range from the beginning to the end, which makes growth through the range valuable to the employee, and at the end it gets us to where we need to be competitive. The cost for implementation of this is $121,525. The board gave us right around $500,000 to implement this in the budget this year. So we are within budget there, and there are some other budgetary considerations which will become evident to you as we proceed through. And so while, and what we're going to talk about next is where we are with comparison to the market in the new range, but this does make us, I think, ahead of the curve, both with public sector comparables and private sector comparables, so that we can have a starting wage which will be attractive when compared side by side to them. And we'll get more into that. But I did want to explain where NE5 comes from and why we have selected that range.
So turning your attention to slide 15, what does this new range mean, the 1957 to 2486? The minimum is about 110% of the public private market, so that blend, but it's exactly at 95% of the public sector. So if you are in the best comparisons, comparing corrections officers to corrections officers elsewhere, you're right. This range puts you just at the bottom of that 95 to 105% curve. At the minimum, it does get above that corridor, but there is some intangibles in terms of looking at attracting people to be corrections officers versus working in some of these other jobs that define the private sector market. And so that's something to consider, and you shouldn't be put off by that 110% number in this case, being that the 95 is really the apples to apples on the precise job we're talking about. But we thought it incumbent to explore opportunities in the private sector as well. At the maximum, at the 2486, you're virtually spot on at 98% of the combined market when taking that into consideration. Bob?
Mr. Chairman, did you want to have us ask for questions for each segment, or would you like us to continue?
Does anyone have any? Have any comments or inquiry, or what's your pleasure?
There's a lot of numbers here. I have a question on the health insurance. Where did the number 14388 come from?
That number was part of a much more detailed survey that we presented.
You passed it in June. It was for the last round of analysis we did on wages and benefits.
Okay. Well, I guess. Okay.
I guess I'll say this. We need to quantify somehow value of the health insurance as part of the total package.
I understand that. I'm not disagreeing with this.
Okay.
I'm just saying I think that number's low in my mind. I do. I'm not here to argue about that, but and give that aside, when we're doing the adjustment when we're going, is the health, this is just pure wage to wage, the health is not considered?
No, health.
The health is considered.
The benefits.
I mean,
it's all in there.
It's all in there.
And the 14 is a blended, right, single-family blend, and it's a good 2016 rate when you look at the blending. It's a good solid.
Okay. So you are considering, when you say we are now going to be 105%.
It's 105 with insurance.
With insurance.
The gap on wages would be greater if we did not put the insurance into the mix. I think we all agree our insurance program is a valuable benefit, and it's a very good benefit. It needs to be considered as part of the compensation package. Quite frankly, when we offer jobs and we talk about our health insurance, it is an incentive to come to work for us. Our health insurance is a very good package. We would be presenting you inflated numbers on wages if we didn't include this, and you would have every right to call us out on it. So we need something which values the insurance, something that comes close to the value of the insurance. The analysis was done a year ago, maybe a little more. The insurance budget has not increased since the time of the study, so it's still a good number, and we put that in. I respect your position. If you believe it's low, that's fine. Again, it's a good number from our perspective, but we would plug in a different one if we thought that there was a better one.
I guess, in a nutshell, I'm for this, okay? But you know where I am on that health,
I do.
So I would leave it at that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion? Why don't you proceed?
Thank you. On page 16, then, we thought we'd touch on how we're going to put all of this into play. The implementation strategy will the new wage range will begin on August 1st, 2016. But in order for the wage adjustments to be fair, those who have received wage adjustments in the first half of the year, when compared to those who will receive wage adjustments after August 1st, they need to be equal. And so anniversary date is the date we give out raises. So anyone who has received a raise in the first 8 months of the year, according to the current wage schedule, those who received their wage increase in the second half of the year, August 1st, will receive the raise they anticipated at the beginning of the year. So whatever the step increase was for those still in the step range will be put into play on their anniversary date as it was anticipated at the beginning of the year by the employee. Now, there are two groups of employees who will be treated differently. The first group are those who are below the minimum. Those who are below the minimum will be raised to the new minimum on August 1st. The county board also approved last year in the budget a 1.5% increase across the board for employees, and COs at the top of these ranges will be given that. Okay. So everyone will get a raise, either the step increase that they expected or the bottom to the new bottom. And if you are at the top range, you'll get the 1.5% that the board approved in the budget. Beginning on January 1st, 2017, then the new process will come into play. Raises will be 3% in the midpoint of the earnings range, and it will be given on the anniversary date. And that is exactly the way we handled the transition in the first study, and it will be the way we handle the transition when the third study is published. Okay? Now, there are some other things that we looked at, and I'd like to highlight some of them for you. The first is attrition. We've had a lot of discussions about the corrections officer's experience on this committee over the course of the last couple of years. And one of the topics of conversation has been attrition. You can see that in 2014, we lost 40% of those that we had hired. And in 2015, we had lost 30%. Our hope is that if we can attract people and keep them for a year, and they have an opportunity to work with the 65% of our folks who are at the top of the range and who have established themselves as excellent employees with a good long-term employment experience, that we will be able to keep them beyond the first year. Some of the things that we do now with the cooperation of the Sheriff's Department, is the interviews have changed just a bit, and there is a very graphic, detailed discussion of the unique aspects of working in the jail. I will leave it at that, but they do not have an easy job. The working environment is unpleasant when compared to many other jobs they could have, and they need to know the truth about that. They also tour the facility before they are offered a job, or before they accept a job. And the other thing the county board approved a few years back was the authorization to hire ahead. And so we can hire two more FTEs than what we actually need. And the reason for that is because there is a 9-month training period for these employees. And that gap is somewhat covered then by having two people more or less on the bench. The thing that is not accounted for here is vacancies, and we do have some vacancies right now.
How many?
I think I'm down to 5 now. We just interviewed 18 new corrections officers. We've offered 5 jobs out of those 18, and we will offer 5 more. The problem that we have in terms of attrition is obvious. Our wages are low. Our working conditions are not as pleasant as some other jobs. And so we are hoping with the new wage scale, which is at the high end of competitive, we will be able to attract good employees to come and work for the jail. So we are recommending 2 things. One is that we be allowed to continue the practice of maintaining a staff of 2 more than the Facebook minimums. And the second is that we can award raises in the first year at 6 months and at the anniversary date. It's hoped that an incentive at the 6-month mark will keep people going at least that far. And again, to keep them through the first year. And so that plus the improved starting wage, we hope, will at least alleviate some of the attrition issues. The second thing we looked at is scheduling. The corrections officers work a 5-day, 2 days off, and then a 4-day on, 2 days off. So they work a 5-2-4-2. And the employee schedule is 2,022 hours per year. It creates 32-hour work weeks for each employee annually, and each employee has 8 32-hour weeks. In which they are encouraged to take an additional shift to bring the work up to a 40-hour work week in that schedule. We understand that's not always possible, and some would just frankly prefer the time off. But again, the 5-2 schedule, just for a point of comparison, is at 2,080 hours a year. Fully staffed, we thought it would be interesting, and this is to the credit of Captain Levin, for you to understand how much work is involved if the two facilities were at full staff and at full capacity. And so this is presented to you for just a kind of a perspective when we get into scheduling and the changes we're proposing for that. The one thing I will tell you, and the one thing the numbers show, is that the MA population is declining. And so along with the declining inmate population, there's a natural decline in the overtime. And we would credit the innovative programs initiated by the Sheriff's Department as being one of the significant reasons for that. You know about electronic marketing, electronic monitoring and home detention. You know about the work crew. Drug court is something that has been put into place. There are alternatives for those arrested for OWI other than incarceration. The sheriff has started a retiree staffing program in which retired COs can pick up extra hours at the jail, and they are vacating underutilized dormitories whenever possible. Supervisor,
myself, Mike Gable, and a few other people went on a tour for the. The correctional office out there, or facility, we were told they're no longer using the work crews.
They use it, but not as extensively.
Yeah, our recruit, Mr. Chairman, our recruit population is way down. Today, work crew inmates that were in custody are like working the laundry and working the kitchen facility is 44 inmates. Other working Ubers are 11 that are in custody. And out of custody totals today were 17 electronic monitoring people that were outside.
Oh, okay.
Our population for work crew inmates used to be higher. However, that's a function of the judiciary, where the sentencing guidelines that they give to the sheriff are so restrictive that we are unable to put them on the work crew.
That's what we were told. Okay.
If you go to page 23, this is pretty much generally the way the facilities are staffed. The pretrial facility has 43 fixed post assignments per day. The detention center has 61. Fluctuations in need of additional officers are covered with overtime. Also, and this will come into play shortly, is there are 4 defunded positions at the detention center and 6 defunded positions at the pre-trial facility. I'm going to skip over 24 because we've already discussed that. We need to talk about overtime. Overtime also has been a significant topic of conversation amongst the Finance Committee over the last couple of years. There has been a steady decrease in corrections officer overtime. This chart will show you that over 2 years it has decreased by $55,580 in the pretrial. And admittedly, that's not a significant amount of money, but it is a decrease. At KCDC, however, there is a far more profound decrease at 318, 392. And in part, at least, the reason for that is because the board funded 2 positions in 2014 for KCDC, thus the 4 defunded positions when compared to 6 for the pretrial. The other thing that comes up a lot is forced overtime, and that there is a general perception that forced overtime occurs frequently. Clearly, this is a problem. It is a deterrent to retention. It creates significant morale issues, and young employees are disproportionately forced to work overtime. So we took a close look at the forced overtime and came up with the following findings. 15% of the overtime shifts at the pretrial facility were forced, 10% at KCDC, and you can see the actual number of shifts under there. But again, I would point out that at KCDC, the number of forced overtime shifts went from 383 in 2014 to 257 in 2015, and that again is in part to the funding of the 2 jobs. If you were to divide the number of shifts by the number of employees, it would be the equivalent of 5 forced overtime shifts over a year for each employee. So that's just so that you get some perspective on it. Now, the overtime policy, which governs work in the jails, does have the opportunity for employees who can to schedule overtime voluntarily and then create an exemption for themselves from being forced. The tales of that I would leave up to my friends in the Sheriff's Department to explain. It is somewhat complicated. But at least there is a way that an employee can protect themselves to some extent at minimum from getting forced. There's 2 other things that we looked at. These are not in our proposal, but I wanted to make sure you knew that we had looked at everything. We looked at the possibility of forcing an 8-hour shift in the 32-hour week. And what you may or may not know is the Fair Labor Standards Act overtime regulations for corrections officers allows for employers to have 171 hours worked over 28 days before overtime is paid. We are not in favor of either one of these policies, and the board has approved a 40-hour overtime policy for its employees, all of its employees, including corrections, and so we are not at all suggesting you consider that. So let's review what we talked about in staffing and overtime. And this is on page 28. 5-2-4-2 schedule with 8 pay periods of 72 hours. Kenosha County has staffed its corrections facilities at the mandatory fixed post level and balanced variations in inmate census by using overtime funds. The introduction of innovative corrections programs and the retiree corrections officer pool has contributed to a downward trend in overtime, and forced overtime is at 10-15%, which is manageable, particularly with overtime policies, which allow employees to choose their own overtime shifts, protecting them from being forced. The reduction of two of the unfunded positions at KCDC has made a significant improvement in the overtime at that facility. So, we are making recommendations about staffing and overtime that we refund two of the unfunded positions at the pretrial facility. Refunding the two jobs has made a significant improvement, as we said, and as overtime declines by the variety of schedule initiatives, two hires should have more than a 1/3 impact on the overtime at the pretrial facility. We will reassess and report to this committee and to Judiciary and Law, and again, continue all of the existing alternatives to incarceration and continue funding the others. Last page. So the final recommendations of the study and of those of us who have worked on it are as follows. Number one, we propose that the board vote to allow us to increase wages to competitive market rates into range NE5. The cost of that, as I said before, is $121,525. We also are requesting a first-year retention incentive of two first-year wage increases of 3% of the range midpoint. We also request that you refund two of the unfunded positions in the pretrial facility, monitor the success rate on that in reducing the overtime, and that cost is $125,000. Again, we would appreciate your support on this. My thanks to the Sheriff's Department, the Payroll Department, Mr. Sussels and his team for helping us with this. And please ask any questions you have.
Ed?
Thank you. When we did the comparison analysis with public and private sector, what kind of scheduling did those other entities have compared to our schedule? In other words, we have a 5-2-4-2. Is anything similar to that in the comparisons, or was it a different schedule altogether?
With regard to the private sector, that's the typical, you know, 5-day-a-week, 8-hour-a-day kinds of schedules. With regard to the other corrections officers, I think we found that what we have here is not uncommon enough in other counties.
There, you mentioned there that was based on 280 hours. Was that or 280?
Yeah, we had a
versus ours is at 2022.
Right.
We're trying to figure out what we're paying for what.
Right.
We pick a number. It could have been 2,000. It could have been 2,022. Right. So that the numbers are all comparable with respect to the salaries. So we use 2080. It is the common 5 days on, 2 days off, number of hours worked in a year. And so private sector numbers come in at that figure. We multiply ours up to compare to that. The schedule is the Sheriff's Department's preferred schedule, and that's what we use.
Right, I understand that. But prior to this schedule, what schedule do we have?
It's on the federal schedule, wasn't it?
We had 6-2-6-2-6-2-6-3-5-3.
It was called the federal schedule, and it was put into play at the time that the HOC was open, correct?
Now, during that span of time, how were we with the overtime at that particular juncture in this county when we were under that 6-2-6-2-6-2-6-3? Whatever, I'm getting confused with sixes all over the place. But
we didn't go that far back. How long have you worked with 5 years?
5 years. So we've been with this schedule for 5 years.
Right.
And then you mentioned the idea, I was reading here, I gotta put these back on, I can't see nothing. 2003, you got two people that quit before the first 2013, two people, 14, seven people quit, and then 2015, five quit. Now, was that due primarily due to wages or scheduling or a combination of both?
Our experience is that people get into the work, they find it's not what they thought it was going to be. Many of you were here for Bob Croker's presentation last month, and that was very telling. I cannot do Bob the justice that he can present with, but it's not a pleasant work environment. It's a difficult place to work. And I'm guessing that people get in there and they find how difficult it is and choose to leave.
So by us giving the starting people starting out in that position $1.73 more an hour, we're going to curb that exodus, $1.73
If you had an opportunity to work at another organization that was not a jail, and you could earn the same amount of money, it would be a lot easier for you to leave.
And that's my point. I don't know where that number is for retention. And
I know it's not where we're at now. So we know that we're not competitive in the market, and I would prefer to start this at least on the high side of competitiveness and then reward those who have worked there, the corrections officers who are here tonight, and the rest of those who have worked for us 6 or more years have managed a successful career in being a corrections officer. I don't know how you get from your first month or your first 2 months to 6 years, but my hope is that the longer you stay, the more you become acclimated to not just the work environment, but become a member of that team, which is a pretty solid group of people, thinking that we have 65% of our employees here more than 6 years.
Ben?
You got one more point here. If I could, so we have 303,000, give or take, budgeted, and to give these particular raises staggered as we had agreed upon, according to what we had presented here, and then to refund two of the unfunded positions in pretrial, which is another 125,000.
Correct.
That's all from that particular $303,000, correct? So there is a little sway in there as far as dollar amounts go, but you're talking about possibly giving people an incentive after 6 months, so that takes in that.
Well, it won't be. The 6 month obviously won't hit until the new year.
Right.
So, but it's the 303 is actually the full raise increase, right?
Right.
I'm asking.
Well, 303 is the 250,000 that we decided for this purpose, and 50,000 that was already budgeted for salary increases for a total of 303. So the 121,000 would reflect the cost for implementation of this plan from August 1st to the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, for a full year impact for two additional positions will be 125. So depending on when you start working.
Okay.
There's, if I may just build on what Bob's saying, when we look at this, there's another consideration to take into account here. As Bob said, there's a 9 month training period.
Right.
During that period of time, if you don't get stickies, if the person leaves after they've been trained, right? You've just spent money to train somebody that you get no return on that investment. And while they're being trained, there's the potential for incurring additional overtime costs to cover the posts that these folks are being trained to fill. So there are some other offsetting advantages that if you raise wages, you can get some more stickiness or reduce the turnover costs. you really save a lot in training costs in the long run.
Right. Well, let me be clear. I'm all for giving them more money. There's no doubt in my mind about that. It's clearly stated what we need to do. I'm just concerned about the dollar amount, and then I'm also concerned about the overtime. And I understand it's curving downward, but it's not, it needs more weight to that. It's got to come down faster.
We have evidence to suggest that the two jobs that we added at the KCDC had a significant impact in the overtime. We know that the programs that the sheriff has put into place has had impact on overtime. And if we do the two more jobs at pretrial and get the same result we had at KCDC, I believe that you will have the weight that you're looking for to really impact the overtime. And we will report that back to you.
Yes.
This will be a success story for Kenosha County.
We actually did an analysis of a kind of a break-even analysis of overtime versus increasing headcount.
Yeah.
I will tell you, it was a bit of an academic exercise, but I think the takeaway from it is what Bob is saying is that, well, you know, if our analytics is reasonably in the ballpark, that the additional costs will be offset substantially by reduced overtime.
Okay. Right. That's all.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm not completely understanding when you did your comparables on the pay. Nobody mentioned to me, or you can clarify to me, that the comparables, were they receiving overtime pay, where I don't believe our jailers do? I mean, how is that compensated in your calculations, or was it?
No, this is base pay, assuming what 28 hours is 52 weeks and 40 hours a week. FLSA doesn't require
no consideration of holidays. So that's like 13 days, or?
No, that would be included in it. So employers of different stripes give paid time off. So what we're saying is, what's the cost of a corrections officer here versus at the other counties on a full-time basis, inclusive of whatever their paid time off is, and comparable in the private sector? So that is an apples and apples. What's the cost of paying somebody 2,080 hours at the hourly wage rate?
Okay, but not considering that they may get 13 days paid, that and ours don't for holidays.
This
part I don't understand.
But the schedule is the schedule. The dollars per hour are balanced against the dollars per hour. We want to make sure that the dollars per hour that we pay are at least comparable to the dollars per hour paid by other employers who require the same level of education, the same amount of experience, and the same general skill set. Okay? So if I pay $10 an hour and someone with the same, those parameters, skill set, education, experience, pays $10 an hour, then we're at 100% of the mark.
Yeah, but I get 10 holidays, and you don't.
The wage compare.
I don't understand. That's why I'm asking.
But that was not part of the analysis.
Was not part of the analysis.
Are we paying them enough money? No. This was the conclusion, and this is what we have to pay them in order to pay them a competitive wage. Are we providing them with a health benefit which has value? And has a value to it that we factor into the wage? Yes, and we factor that in. The other elements that we looked at were the elements of, well, you know what they are, scheduling and overtime and that kind of thing. The overtime, our employees in that class have a remarkable amount of opportunity to earn overtime. Or not is the point. And so we have some employees, and I think there are some legendary employees who have earned $100,000 a year, and of it would have to work remarkable amounts of hours to get that. I understand that. But trying to factor overtime into this would not be the apples comparison that we want to find.
I understand that. But I just see a difference when one gets paid holidays and they don't. The rest of the program I like. I like the pay schedule, but that part, just we should have figured that in somehow.
Well, the board 2 years ago, and I'm saying this just for a point of information.
It has a value.
As an advocate or not advocate, the board gave, was it an additional 1 or 2 days?
I think it was 3.
3 days?
Two
corrections. I thought it was two.
Two
corrections officers as an offset in some way for the holiday.
Yeah, I think we got 3 or 3.
I remember you taking the action. It was more than 2 years ago, but it was 2 days. So, to the corrections officers, then to the other employees. And that was passed as a result of the holiday issue.
Which didn't make up the 10, though.
I'm just telling you as a point of
view. I understand.
Are you yielding the floor? You're done.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to vote the whole package down, but it's something that I would have felt better if it was included in.
Ryan?
Run past me again. I remember this, and after we did this 5-2-4-2 thing, all hell broke loose because all of a sudden people aren't getting 40 hours. Why did we do that?
It was at the recommendation of the sheriff. That was the schedule that the sheriff had proposed for his corrections officer.
So,
and that's his.
So what if so that's the only way he started figuring it. I know, I remember it, I didn't think it was 5 years ago, but time goes by.
Yeah, it was a warm August night in here, I can tell you that. A lot hotter here.
So what would happen if they went back to that schedule?
Then the cost schedule?
Yeah.
I don't know, we would have to do an analysis of it again.
Because then everybody would get at least 40 hours.
Well, these fellows had to manage it.
Maybe Captain Halsey could respond.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To your point, to Mr. Kubicki's point, the schedule is the number one complaint from all of the officers in the ARSs that I spoke to. I don't know if they're shaking their heads or not. When I was promoted to captain 3.5 years ago, I spoke to the staff, and they all said it's the number one complaint, having this 32-hour work week that shorts them 8 hours of pay. The sheriff, along with supervisors and members from all shifts from both facilities, met several months in a row to come up with a better schedule. We floated several options. We floated 10-hour shifts and 12-hour shifts, and the representatives from each individual shift from both facilities, some of them brought back written reports, some of them brought back verbal reports. I don't know how far they went out to all their colleagues. The ultimate discussion, the ultimate resolution from that months-long discussion was the schedule we have now, not perfect, was the best option going. We floated the 5-2-5-3 schedule. We floated 10-hour shifts. One of our corporals did staffing analysis at KCDC to see if we could handle 10-hour, 12-hour shifts, different rotations. We came back with, collectively, not just the sheriff's decision, but all of the officers in the room, said that this was the best option that we could find. And the sheriff, I know, is open to finding a better option. However, we've did a lot of research. There was a several month long process to get to that conclusion.
And then one knows that when they get that 32 hours, they can work an extra shift, but they only get straight time for that week. Right?
For that week, correct.
So they get penalized. I don't say penalized, but I'm just saying they got to work 8 hours. They're actually working overtime.
We found in practice, and I'm sure the officers know this, that they don't work the overtime during that 32-hour week.
Okay.
They work the overtime the previous for the following
week. And
they're
not forced to work it during that week?
No, they're not.
Okay. Something, anyway.
All right. Are you done?
I'm done.
Anything else?
I want to follow up just to the point. The supervisor asked if they're forced to work that 32-hour, forced to work the overtime. They are not. If no overtime exists, which doesn't ever happen.
Okay.
But if no overtime exists, we will staff them on other duties. We will have, it does happen with our ARSs, our booking clerks, that sometimes there isn't overtime, very rarely, but we will staff them on other duties. So we do fill the 40-hour work week. That's something that the sheriff thought was very important. We will do that, although overtime does exist, so we require that before.
I got you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm done.
Okay. you know, you kind of know I'm this health guy person. And I think, Bob, one of the thoughts here is, and I really want this committee to consider this, and I'm for this, I've said this, but how many people, when you're interviewing, have wives at work, spouses at work? Do you know that?
We don't ask that question.
You don't ask that question?
Okay. We wouldn't find that out.
Okay.
Until...
All right. I was just curious. Okay. One of the things we could look at doing is getting them off the health plan. Okay? To us... Remember, the health plan around here is a $22 million elephant. Okay, it is. No matter how you cut it, how much it's contributed to all that, it's $22 million. All right, this $121,000 isn't even 1% of that number, okay, in relative to schedule of benefits. My thought is we need to look at this health plan. I know I've talked about this, but one of the things could be is if you don't take the health insurance, we'll flip you $2,000. Those things exist when you start looking modernizing health plans. That's all I'm going to say about that because I know we've talked.
Yes.
That could keep some people here that have a spouse working at home. They could get on their health insurance. That could exist. I'm just saying, an extra $2,000 would save us on the back end of a health plan for sure when we're looking at $14,000 a piece. Okay, you get my point.
I do.
Okay, thank you. That's all I'm going to say on that. But I'm going to move forward as Mr. Chairman.
All right. Does the committee want to take some action this evening? Do you want to think about it till the next meeting?
I'm ready to vote.
Whatever you like.
I'm ready to vote.
Well, there's no motion right now.
I'll make
floor,
a motion that we approve the plan.
All right. There is a resolution before you that incorporates by reference the proposal. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Supervisor Frederick, second by the chair. Discussion. One point I don't think has been brought out. What is the second year cost? You said it's 125. First year cost, what's the second?
171 for the full year. And then the positions, that's a full year.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the same. If you add 171 to 125, the 303 we add in the 16.
And there could be a decline in the cost if they don't leave us, and then we got to work more overtime too. So
well,
is that an issue too?
So Ron, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I hear what you're saying. I think I know where you're going.
Yeah.
There's more potential for the cost to decline because that 125 might be offset with overtime.
Yeah, that's right.
The decline in overtime might offset
that's
the 125.
That's,
so
that's my point.
There's more opportunity for cost decline and cost increase with this plan.
Can I make one comment?
Yeah.
We are going to present this to Judiciary and Law on June 1st, just so you know.
All right, further discussion. Further discussion. All right, if there's no other discussion, we'll vote. No other discussion? Voice vote, do you want?
Roll call.
Roll call, Greg. Or Kim, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Greg.
Yes.
Ron.
Yes.
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 Yes. Passage unanimously, and we'll circulate the resolution.
You're going to come back with some findings.
Will you make some sort of formal presentation at the county board meeting while we spend
this won't go to this upcoming board meeting. It'll go to the in June.
First one in June.
I would suggest that you do this maybe abbreviated presentation, but at least a presentation.
Whatever. So, Madam Chairperson?
Yes.
This is a simple majority.
He loves coming here.
Anyway. Not amending.
Might want to move here. You never know.
Thank you.
Right, might
we'll
want
to
move here after being here so long.
The bills are to be circulated around the table.
We have the bills.
They're right there. It's got the green stamp
here.
On
it. I saw it. I read them.
Here.
Okay. So then
where
are they? Should be right in front of you there. The green stamp.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I got there.
Can I make a conference, Chairman?
It should be the same.
Go Cubs.
All right. Then we'll go into the reports. Finance Committee budget calendar.
Okay, I'll ask April to explain the budget calendar.
Laura Clem worked extensively with the county executive's office.
Everybody have a copy of the calendar?
Mm-hmm.
putting this information together. The main two meetings that were problematic that they worked out was the Judiciary and Law on October 12th and the Human Services Committee on October 20th. So all the oversight committees have their dates pretty much set, and they're all aware of it and ready to go. It's also been worked out with our chairwoman of the county board. And then for our finance committee review of the budgets, they start Monday, October 24th. We do them Tuesday, the 25th, Wednesday, the 26th, and final Thursday on the 27th. And then the budgets will go to the county board for first and second readings, November 9th and 10th.
Rick?
April, were you going to say more?
No, that's all that I have.
So this calendar, I think the chairman of the board is okay with this calendar.
Yes.
And I think the clerk is okay with this calendar. So this will be the calendar. We could bring it back to a future meeting and adopt it, or you could just accept this as the calendar tonight, whatever you like.
Do I accept this tonight, think about it, or what's your pleasure?
I don't know if it needed approval.
It doesn't really need approval, but the committee...
We could take it up at the next meeting, too.
We could take it up at the next meeting.
Yeah.
Job there? Yeah, maybe they want, maybe, yeah. Maybe I'll put my 2 cents in if I got 2 cents left by then. Okay, good.
All right, very good. Any reports from Bob Reel?
I think the balance of these reports are for information.
You have nothing?
And nothing new. We made one thing here at the closeout report in April, and things. We have the auditors here.
Did you get one, Rick?
Everything looks
Rick.
Good right now.
What's that? Schedule?
How's the debt?
Pardon me?
How's that debt figure?
The OPEB has gone down $11 million. So it went from 80 to 70, like 81 to 72. So that's going to be a good. Our general fund, our general obligation debt has been flat, and then the OPEB fine. So we're in good shape.
How's our health cost running right now? Do you know?
Pardon me?
How's our health cost running?
Our health costs are continuing to run at a deficit like we were last.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
We're analyzing that, and we're going to have a meeting with the consultant next month. We'll know more, but it's similar to last year. It's running at a deficit. What we're seeing is there's this corridor of planes that are. So, we fund about 25,000 per employee per year, roughly. And so there's this corridor of claims that are at 50,000. So, and that's $2 million to $3 million higher than what we funded. And that there's no stop loss. There's, that's 100, there's 100 of those. So,
100 people spending over 50,000?
Over 25.
So they're right. 25.
Yeah.
Is that all different?
All over the
place. All over the place,
all
as far as problems, as far
yep.
as it.
Yep. All, it's just
lots of different
all over. That's probably the biggest. Well,
I think it's a given fact that Kenosha County's health costs are higher than Racine and whatever. Because I remember when we were talking health insurance for supervisors, their plan was, their insurance was lower than ours.
I know our region compared to the national is much higher.
Yeah.
I didn't know we were higher than Racine.
We're not the only ones. It's all over the place. A lot of it has to do with the aging workforce. Utilization's up. Prescription drug expenses are up.
Yeah.
It's just
baby boomers is up.
Again, when you get old, things start happening.
It's happening to me now.
Yeah.
Just take a look at me.
That's just the way it is. A lot of that you can't help. No matter how you cut it, you can't help it.
Mr. Chairman, that concludes my report.
All right, very good. Well, that ends the agenda. Is there any other business coming before the committee?
Move adjourned.
Second.
Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.